This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
On Monday, April 27th, there will be two gala celebrations in Vancouver. One gala is a week-long event that opens at Canada Place. It celebrates the mining barons of BC. The other gala honors not the mine owners, but those communities around the globe who are resisting the unjust and violent mining practices of Vancouver-based corporations. Joining me in the studio is Steve Stewart. He's a spokesperson for the Mining Justice Alliance, a coalition that supports communities of resistance across the globe. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you.
Your gala celebration starts on Hastings in the downtown east side of Vancouver, and you call it a toxic tour. Why that title, Toxic Tour?
One of the sort of curiosities about Vancouver, there's a lot of particular attractions to Vancouver. It's a very pretty city, but many people are not aware that it's the home to the largest concentration of head offices for mining corporations in the world. And so just as there's many other guided tours of Vancouver, we thought we'd do a tour to point out some of the highlights of the mining industry in downtown Vancouver. And unfortunately, the results of mining so often are toxic runoff, so we dubbed it the Toxic Tour.
And is the toxicity simply literally taken, that there's a poisoning of water, poisoning of the environment, or is it broader than that? Is there things that really affect the communities of people who live around mine sites?
Yeah, it's really a combination. Often when we think of the damage caused by mining, we think of things such as acid runoff or the cyanide used in the processing of gold mining. And that definitely is an area of strong concern. But many of the communities that we're in contact with around the world talk about the social damage being just as serious, the deep divisions that happen within the communities, the extinction of traditional lifestyles, and the violence that seems to come all too often when Canadian mining companies set up shop in their communities.
And when you say violence, is that a metaphor?
No, it's real. I don't have an actual tally of the number killed. My main focus in my work is around Latin America, and virtually every month there are a few people that are killed while opposing Canadian mining companies. The most recent was an incident in Guatemala last month where communities are opposed to a mine proposed by Vancouver's Tahoe Resources. And four of the leaders of the Xinka people were coming back from a community consultation on mining and were abducted. Three of them were released. Two of them had suffered torture. And one of them was killed.
Now it's a tour. So what is going to happen on the tour?
Well, we hope to really, in some ways, model the kinds of tours that people get when they're visiting Vancouver. So there will be uniformed tour guides that will be taking people to sites of interest. The event will begin at the Woodward's Atrium at 111 Hastings. And there we'll have a kickoff to the tour, a little bit of background. Some people from the Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines will be doing a performance. And then we'll proceed along the way. And as we reach spots of interest, people from affected communities will be putting on creative events related to the issue they're concerned with. So you might have, for example, our stop at Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim is a mining company based in downtown here that has been trying to mine gold in the watershed of El Salvador's principal river. Several opponents have been murdered, And since then, the Salvadoran government has actually withdrawn Pacific Rim's license to exploit the mine. As a result, Pacific Rim is suing the Salvadoran government for several hundred million dollars. And we want to encourage Pacific Rim to drop their suit, so there will be quite a number of people that will line up in front of Pacific Rim's office and drop our own suits. And that's a bit of a taste of the kinds of activities you'll see along the way.
So you go to numerous mining corporation headquarters, and there's some education as to what's happening in the mines that those corporations are operating in different countries around the world.
Yes. The Mining Justice Alliance is a fairly broad coalition of both groups and individuals, and we work with a number of sort of diaspora groups in Vancouver that are linked to communities in their own countries that have been affected by Canadian mining companies. So in this case, the Filipino community groups will be putting on activities, Tibetans outside China Gold, the Salvadorans, Guatemalans, and people from a number of other affected communities. As well, we're seeing a real push now to expand mines here in British Columbia. And a number of representatives from affected First Nations communities in BC will also be coming down for this event.
And where will your tour end?
Well, the reason we've chosen the evening of Monday the 29th for the Toxic Tour is because that's the kickoff day for BC Mining Week, when the BC government and the large mining companies sort of have a week-long I Love Mining series of activities. And they are kicking off their event with a large gala at the Canada Place down on the waterfront. So our Toxic Tour will end there, and we'll be having a sort of people's gala with speakers and activities and a free buffet for participants.
And it'll be climaxed with what story? Story of what?
Well, that's sort of hard to say, because there's a lot of compelling stories. There'll be speakers from the Tsilhqot'in Nation at the gala, from the Sequimak, who are also facing expansion of mining in their territories, from the Ohosat on the island, facing the threat of the Catface coal mine. And there will also be a speaker who's coming up from Guatemala to talk about not a specific site, because unfortunately in Guatemala there's a number of Canadian mining companies. In fact, most of the mines operating or concessions in Guatemala are in the hands of Canadian mining companies. But he'll be speaking about the effects of Vancouver's mining companies, particularly Goldcorp and Tahoe Resources, on the communities he works with in his country.
You mentioned at the beginning, and I didn't ask you to elaborate a bit more, that people in BC would be surprised at how important Canadian mining companies are in a global sense, how so many companies are registered here in Vancouver. Why is that? That it's not because their main mining operations are here, though they have them, as you mentioned, on Indigenous lands in particular, but why is it?
Yeah, there's a variety of reasons, and it's a relatively recent phenomenon. I mean, there's been Canadian mining companies operating abroad for a long time, but in the last decade and a half, the expansion has been significant. And today, about two-thirds of the world's mining companies have their head offices in Canada, of which close to half are here in Vancouver. There's about 980 that have their offices in downtown Vancouver.
980?
Yes.
Wow. That's going to be a long tour if you stop at
Yeah, unfortunately, there's a few that are getting a free ride just because we don't have the time to stop at everyone. But there's a number of reasons for why that is. One is Canada's own mining tradition and the experience that Canadian mining corporations have on developing mines in the territories of colonized peoples. But there's also, since particularly in Latin America, since the mid-90s, there's been a real push on the part of the Canadian government to open up other countries to Canadian mining. So the Canadian diplomatic corps have been enlisted into pushing through legislation that will open traditionally sort of more regulated territories to Canadian mining. There's also efforts on the part of the Canadian International Development Agency, both to fund development projects that they joint manage, or they find NGOs to joint manage with mining companies. But also, in the past, the CETA has helped to rewrite the mining codes in Colombia and had an influence on the rewriting of mining codes in Central America in a way that significantly reduced royalties, but also made it much easier for Canadian mining companies to move into those territories. So there's been a sort of wedge work on the part of the Canadian state to open other countries for Canadian mining companies. As well, at the end of the 90s, there was a shift in our policies around the Canadian Pension Plan, which Canadian Pension Plan funds used to be primarily invested in government bonds. They were privatized starting in the late 90s, and a very large portion of those funds went into Canadian mining corporations. In the last year, it was $2.44 billion. And this influx of funds helped what were previously sort of small junior exploration companies have the capital to sort of springboard into international work.
You've raised the question of pension funds being used to promote mining companies. At the same time, does that leave there an opportunity for demands that people who have pensions invested demand that if those pensions are promoting mining companies that are behaving, killing people, etc., exploiting and destroying the land, that they be withdrawn?
In the case of Canadian Pension Plan, it's a challenge. What the government did when it privatized the investments was it created the Canadian Pension Plan Investment Board, made up largely of executives from the very companies that they're investing in. And it's been a challenge in terms of, every working Canadian is really a shareholder in the Canadian Pension Plan, but it's been very difficult to work to push for policies that are around responsible investing within the Canadian Pension Plan. Although there has been some impact, and they've made in the last few years some very sort of limited guidelines around investing in the arms industry and tobacco. So that indicates that there could be some movement there. The other area where I think there's a lot more room for movement is in the public sector workers' funds. In the case of, for example, the BC Management Investment Corporation, which manages the funds of workers in the public sector, those investment funds are jointly managed by the employer and by the trade unions. And so there's a lot more space there because we have a voice at the table, those of us who are organized with public sector unions, to push for firmer guidelines. And we've seen with the recent scandal around the Royal Banks bringing in people from other countries to replace Canadian workers, the threats that the unions made there to withdraw investments, those same kind of efforts could be made around issues of mining companies. And I think apart from the general moral aspect of our funds should not be invested in companies that are contributing to violence and environmental destruction, there's a direct worker-to-worker aspect. For example, Goldcorp in Guatemala forbids union organizing, so it's not possible for the workers to organize. And just this January, Goldcorp's security guards shot half a dozen of its own workers who were protesting after they had been denied the traditional vacation pay that's paid at the end of the year. So there's a strong argument for Canadian trade unions to take a stronger look at the role that their members' pensions play in making possible these actions by the Canadian mining companies.
Well, it's good to know of that opening, and hopefully organizing can develop it and make it a fact. Maybe we could just end if you could give people details of where and when they can join in on the Toxic Tour and bring the voice of mine workers and people suffering from Canadian Mining Corporations more into public consciousness.
Thank you. The event begins, or the activities will begin at 5 at the Woodward's Atrium at 111 West Hastings Street. There will
that's
be...
That's on Monday.
That's Monday, the 29th, yes. Mm-hmm. We've got about 40 minutes of activities there because we know it always is difficult for people to get there right at 5 on the dot. And so there'll be some performances, a welcome from representative of the Downtown East Side, presentation from representatives of the Mayan community here in the Lower Mainland and from the Philippine Migrante Cultural Collective. And then we'll head up down Hastings Street. I don't have all the details of the route at hand, but you can find copies of the map at the either at the Mining Justice Alliance website, which is Mining Justice Alliance at wordpress.com, or on our Facebook Mining Justice Alliance site. But we'll sort of weave through the downtown and then head down Burrard Street into Canada Place, where the gala will kick off around 8 o'clock.
Good. I hope lots of people turn up.
I certainly hope so. I think it's going to be a memorable and fun event. I mean, all marches can be enjoyable, but I think this one will be quite distinct from most ones people have participated in.
I've been speaking with Steve Stewart. He's a spokesperson for the Mining Justice Alliance. And as he mentioned, you can get more information by going to Mining Justice Alliance at WordPress. Is that right?
Yes.
And there'll be updates and more ongoing information.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@cooperadio.org.